recognizes for the opportunity to give a talk here. So I will give this talk on dilation and non-cumulative LP spaces. So dilation will be in a sense that it looks like Nagy's dilation theorem for contraction and Hilbert spaces. Dilation by something which looks like a unitary. So I will give some sort of overview or presentation of several recent results in this direction, and I will also present some open problems in this topic. So we will work with non-commutative LP spaces. So I have I wrote a few lines of definitions for those who would be non-familiar with these spaces. So the first case to be considered is the case of a semi-finite Riemann algebra equipped with a trace, and the definition of the non-commutative LP space associated to M is like this. You take on a suitable weak star dense subspace of M, you consider this quantity, and it turns out that it is a norm. It satisfies the triangle inequality, and by definition, the non-commutative LP space associated to this context is the completion under that norm. So you all, at least everybody knows, can recognize through this definition the example of Schatten spaces, which consists of the LP spaces associated to the usual trace on B of H. And of course, this definition includes the commutative LP spaces. I just write this because I will have to talk about commutative case. There is also a non-commutative LP spaces associated to non-semi-finite LP spaces. Essentially, I think here about Agerup's construction, but I will not write any definition. But what I want to stress is the fact that all definitions or results that I will, or definition results I will give in this talk, make sense or are valid in the general case, including the non-semi-finite case. Now let me come to the definition of what I call a dilation. There will be two kinds of definitions. Okay, so first we start from a linear map on LP of M, an non-commutative LP space, and we assume that T is power bounded. So power bounded means that the powers are bounded. Okay, so there is a C that Tn is as norm less than C for any n. And I introduce this definition. I say that T admits a loose dilation if there exists another non-commutative LP space, LP of M prime. And okay, so we should look at this diagram. So you have the T from LP of M into LP of M, and the definition means that there exists another non-commutative LP space, and an operator from the first space to the second space, and a second operator Q from this space to that space, and also an invertible operator U on the top here, which is such that the set of the un are bounded, which means that u and u minus 1 are power bounded, and for which you have this relation for any n, which is the usual relation you expect when you talk about dilations. Second step or second case, in this definition J and Q are just supposed to be bounded, and you use the powers are just bounded, but we do not insist on being contractive. So now we have a second definition. We can consider the case of a contraction, otherwise it would not make sense. And we will say that T admits a tight dilation if you have the above properties, but with everything being contractive, J, Q, and U, and U minus 1. So this terminology is not an official terminology, but it's just for this talk. But in this talk, it's important for me to make the difference between these two types of dilation, because it turns out that some different phenomenon happen in, depending on whether you consider contractions or just boundedness. I'll say I will have to.
If you have it for n equals 0, right?
So yes. Yes, J is, yes, J is an isomorphism onto its range. Yes, so if you compare the two definitions, here it's an isometric embedding and here it's isomorphic embedding. So this is some kind of definition for operators or power bounded operators. There is a similar definition for semigroups. So this is the same set of definition. You consider now a bounded C0 semigroup, which means strongly continuous semigroup on MT of L, and you can consider the same definition. So you say that the semigroup admits a loose dilation or a tight dilation when you have a diagram like before, except that now you assume that there is a bounded C0 group on MT of M prime that's satisfying that relation, or here a bounded C0 group of isometry. Okay, so all along this talk, I will have to consider what we call the continuous case, which is here, and the discrete case, which is the previous one. And the two aspects are, in general, parallel to each other, but there are some differences. So let me remind you what happens on Hilbert spaces to show you the difference between loose and tight. So on Hilbert spaces, you all know the dilation theorem, and because of this, tight dilation means being contracted. And if you think about the definition of loose dilation, you will see that it means being similar to a contraction. So this is exactly the kind of difference which here happens between loose and tight. And for semigroups, the situation is completely the same. Tight dilation means being a contracted semigroup, and loose dilation means being similar to a contraction semigroup. Okay, so I want to, before moving to the LB spaces, I want to remind you some old results about this kind of dilation on Hilbert spaces. First, the results of Fogel, which says that there exists power-bounded operators without a loose dilation. Okay, so it means that if you start from, if you look at tight dilation, every contraction has a tight dilation, so there is no classification. Everything which can be considered has a tight dilation, but for the loose dilation, it's, you have a some sort of classification. And I did not write it here down, but I remind you that this classification can be made thanks to von Poulsen's theorem in terms of some functional calculus property, because this is equivalent to being polynomially, completely polynomially bounded. Okay, and there is an analog of Fogel's theorem for semigroups. Okay, so now let me turn to commutative LP spaces, and then we will move to non-commutative LP spaces. Okay, so when we consider commutative LP spaces, we have to pay attention to the fact that in my definition of dilations, everything was non-commutative. But when we work with a commutative LP space, of course we can introduce some sort of intermediate definition when we make a dilation through a commutative object. So this is what I wanted to explain here. So you start from an operator on a commutative LP space, and when you consider the definition of tight or loose dilations I gave before, if you insist that these spaces are commutative LP spaces, you get another kind of dilation, which we like for, of course, commutative dilation. Okay. And the main result in this subject is an old result of Akoglu 30 years ago, which says that if you take any positive contraction on a commutative LP space, it admits a commutative tight dilation. So you start from a commutative contraction, and you get such a diagram for some commutative LP space here and for some invertible isometry UP. So this is the main, one of the main results you always have to keep in mind to go further into the subject. So after this theorem was proved, there were some progress made and some characterization, and for instance this one was published by Peller in 83, characterization of which contractions on commutative LP spaces admit tie dilation. So the characterization is the following. You take T, a contraction on non-commutative up on commutative LP space, and the result is that T admits a commutative tie dilation if it is dominated by a positive contraction in this sense. So it's quite close to be positive. It's not positive, but it's close to be. So it's some sort of converse to this theorem, which says that okay, up to domination you cannot do much better than this. And this is a classification. This is a characterization in the sense that there exist contractions without a tie dilation, without such a domination property. So you have a really two classes of contractions, the ones which have and the ones which they do not have. Okay, so if we want to consider this situation in the non-commutative context, we have this proposition which was proved by Marius Unger and myself, which is that the above characterization is true in the following sense. Without the work in the non-commutative sense in the okay. If you start with a commutative space and you want to dilate through non-commutative LP spaces, you may think that the situation is different, but this is a proposition that says that it is not different at all. If T is a contraction on a commutative LP space, which has a tight dilation through maybe a non-commutative LP space, then it has necessarily a tight dilation through a commutative LP space. So by allowing the top space to be non-commutative, you do not get more. This is the meaning of this proposition. Okay, so this in some sense makes the situation completely clear in terms of tight dilation. So now let's turn to the loose dilations. So the first result I want to mention is that one. So it's an analog of Fogel's theorem, but for LP spaces, which is that there exist power bounded operators on LP without a loose dilation. So I will not explain anything on this theorem, but it's like in the Hilbert space case, you have power bounded operators with or without loose dilation. There is really this is really a property, and so it leads to the question of to the following question. No, it doesn't mean, but I mentioned this for the following question: does any contraction admit a loose dilation? So why is it? What is the meaning of this question? On Hilbert spaces, the situation was very clear. If you start with a contraction, you have a tight dilation. Okay. But here, if you start with a contraction, okay, because of this characterization I showed, Peller's statement, some contractions have a tight dilation, some contractions do not have a tight dilation. But maybe those who do not have a tight dilation, maybe they have a loose dilation, and this we do not know. So this is the first moment where we do not have the knowledge. And this question is related to a famous conjecture called the Matveyev conjecture, which is the question of whether there is an analog of Feynman's inequality for contractions on LP spaces. So you start with the shift operator on small LP, and for any polynomial F, you consider NP of F, which is the norm of this operator. So if P is 2, this is just a usual sub-norm of the polynomial. and then you take a contraction T, and the question is whether the normal f of t is less than a constant times this normal f. But this normal f is defined, depends on p. Okay. So it's like, and the same question is open if c equals 1. So it's some sort of, this question is some sort of LP analog of whether every contraction is polynomially bounded in the LP sense. Yes? It's a norm, yes? Ah, yes, or F schematic. Sorry. Okay, thank you.
NP is just a norm of schematic, not F.
It doesn't depend on. So I discussed power-bounded operators. So about, if we talk about C0 semi groups, I do not have much to say because the situation is essentially the same. So there is an analog of Akogou's theorem which is due to Fendler, and well, I don't want to repeat the same thing, so I just say that there is nothing interesting about C0 semi groups here. Okay, so now I would like to make a break to say a few words on t equals 1, because in this discussion I started with t different from 2, of course, and different from 1 and infinity, and for non-commutative LP spaces I will do the same. So the case t equals 1 is trivial, and because it's trivial I do not want to spend too much time, but just a few words. If you start with a Banach space, any Banach space X, and with a power-bounded operator X, there is a trivial way to construct a dilation, which is to put x into L1 of x by just taking x onto the sequence which is x at the zero coordinate and zero elsewhere, and you have a natural map from L1 of x into x which is given by this definition, and this makes sense because you start from this sequence in L1 of x, and the Tn are supposed to be a bounded sequence. So you have this property, and if you just take the usual shift operator on L1 of X, you realize that this is exactly you have such a dilation property. So the conclusion of this very simple computation is that if you start from any power bounded operator or any contraction on a commutative or non-commutative LP space, you get immediately a loose dilation if it's power bounded, or a tight dilation if it is a contraction. So you get everything you want. So in some sense it's not a very interesting situation. Okay. So I turn to non-commutative LP spaces, and I exclude because of this previous discussion, I exclude the case t equals 1 and t equals infinity and of course t equals 2. So in the non-commutative LP spaces, we can first think about an analog of Akogou's theorem. So Akogou's theorem was about contractive, positive contractions. So it's interesting here to consider the notion of complete positivity and complete positivity. So just a few words to say that on a non-commutative LP space you have an order, because these are operators, so you can consider positive operators, and you can also consider complete positivity exactly as you do the same way as for operator spaces, namely you consider matrices with values in LP, you identify this as an LP space, as a non-commutative LP space associated to Mn of L, and then on this space you have an order. And so it makes sense to consider complete positivity for an operator T by saying that T will be completely positive if this tensorization, this amplification of T will be positive for any n. And this theorem was proved by Marius Junger and myself, and this theorem says that there exists a completely positive contraction on OL, on the simplest non-commutative LP space, the Schatten space SP, without any tight dilation. So the meaning of this statement is that there is no analog of Akoglu's theorem in the non-commutative setting. Indeed, the assumption on T here is the most restrictive one. We assume that it's contraction, of course, and completely positive. And the tight dilation is not in the context of operator space theory. When I said that there exists a completely positive contraction without any tight dilation, I remind you that I do not assume that the J, the Q are completely bounded or whatever matricial property, it's just in the Banach space sense. So you start with this strong assumption and you cannot get to anything, which is the meaning. Okay, I just want to say a word, to take a few minutes to say a word on what is behind. I don't want to write any proof, but I just want to say that this is related to the notion to a simple notion of factorization. If you consider the conjugate number Q of P, and if you consider, you can consider the following definition, say that T is factorizable, if there are two linearized matrices T1 and T2, such that T is just the composition of T1 and the adjoint of T2, and it is very easy to show that tight dilation is a stronger property than this factorizability. And what we actually show is that there exists a contraction T on SP which is completely positive but not factorizable. So the reason why I tell you this kind of explanation is to mention what we use in the proof. What we use in the proof is the properties of isometries and non-commutative LP spaces as they were described in a paper by Yeadon describing the isometries and non-commutative LP spaces. Okay, so I mentioned that it is possible to do the same to get a similar result with some I-groups. And because of these results, there is no description or characterization of the contraction or of the contraction scissor some I-groups which admitted tight dilation. This remains a mystery. Okay, so if we now turn to Ruse dilation, I mentioned in the commutative setting that I don't know if there is a contraction on commutative LP spaces which without a Ruse dilation, but even if we consider the non-commutative setting, I don't have the answer yet. Okay, so I don't know if you start with a contraction on LP, I don't know if we can get a Ruse dilation. Okay. So now I will talk about functional calculus because, as I will show you, these questions are related to questions about H infinity calculus. So I don't want to go too much into technical details, but what my plan is to do is the following. I mentioned to you that in the Hilbert space case, because of Van Poulsen's theorem, having a Ruse dilation has a characterization in terms of functional calculus. So what I want to explain here is that this idea can be in some sense applied here. Okay. There are some similar results. There is a relationship between functional calculus and Ruse dilation. This is the idea. Okay, so I want to, so this will be a definition for semigroups, not for operators. So the basic definition is the following. You consider a sector. I will define the notion of sectorial operators, which is related to the notion of bounded analytic semigroups. So you consider a sector in a complex plane. You start with an angle omega, and you consider all the complex numbers in this sector, this sigma omega. And now you consider on a Banach space X, you consider possibly unbounded operator A, which is technical conditions, closed and then should be fine, and it's called sectorial of type omega, if the spectrum is inside the closure of this sector, and if moreover, and this is a technical condition for those who are not familiar with this, it's not very important, this technical condition is that when you take a slightly bigger sector, theta bigger than omega, and if you look at the resolvent operator outside this sector, then you get a uniform constant for this operator. And the first relation between sectorial operators and semigroups is given by this statement that if you start with a bounded C0 semigroup on X, and if you let minus A with be the generator of the semigroup, which we denote usually by this relation, then A is sectorial of type 5 over 2. And the construction of H infinity calculus is due to Macintosh, but well, of course Macintosh did much more than what I explained here, but I wanted to mention his name. So the idea is the following. So you start with a sectorial operator, and you consider an angle theta bigger than the sectorial angle, and so you look at this picture, you have the sectorial angle here, and you have the theta bigger here, and you consider bounded analytic functions defined on this sector, so you consider function f, which is bounded analytic, and you consider the subnorm corresponding to this sector, and now you introduce this contour, and you think about defining f of a through a Cauchy formula, so you define f of a by this formula, so this is the integral on this contour, and you have to make this technical assumption, which is not technical, which is an assumption to make this integral absolutely convergent. And we say that a admits a bounded H infinity calculus with respect to the angle theta if you have this boundedness property. So if you are familiar with polynomially bounded operators, you see the point. It's when you define functional calculus, you cannot in general define functional calculus for every H infinity function. You first have to start with polynomials by approximation and so on, you get more and more functions. So the idea is the same here. You start with a small set of functions, these ones, and in Macintosh, in the Macintosh construction that I will not explain here, there are more approximation processes to get more functions, to get the definition for more functions. So I will mention some results from this work with Naisinger and Schindler, like some sort of advertisement, but it's also to mention where some of the results come from. So I want to show first a very easy relationship between dilations and functional calculus. So this is proposition. It's very simple, but it shows you the relationship. So assume that you start with a bounded semigroup, which admits a loose dilation, and you call minus A its generator. So I remind you that A is sectorial of type pi over 2. And the result is that A has a bounded H infinity functional calculus for any theta strictly bigger than this pi over 2. So the proof is very simple. You assume that there is a loose dilation for TT, so you have this kind of condition with for some bounded C0 group UT on some bigger space LP of n prime, and then you let minus B be the generator of this group, so you have TT is generated by minus A, UT is generated by minus B, and because of this relation and because of some functional calculus principles, it's easy to see that for any bounded analytic function f, which I described before, you have this dilation property between f of a and f of b. And of course, obviously, you get that the norm of f of a is less than this constant times the norm of f of b. So to prove that a has a bounded h infinity calculus, it suffices to show the same for b. And for b, okay, it suffices to show that b has a bounded h infinity calculus. And this is true, and this is due to some work by Heber and Prus. And what is this result of Heber and Prus? What is the difference between A and B? The difference between A and B is that A was any generator of any semigroup, but B is the generator of a group. So this is the main difference. Because it's a group, you can apply some transference principles to reduce to the case, to change up to some constants, to change B into some derivation operator. And then when B is a derivation operator, these operators f of B are some Fourier multipliers. So you get to some problems of estimating Fourier multipliers in Banach space valued LP spaces. And there is some work using the UMD property and based on Bourguin's result and from the proof in the 80s to show that that this kind of estimate is possible. Okay, I don't want to write more about it. So this shows you some connection. And I will show you next another one. Okay, so I mentioned the following problem. I told you that if you start with a contraction semigroup on LP of M, I told you that I do not know if it admits a loose dilation. And similarly, I don't know if it admits a bounded H infinity of functional calculus. Okay, so I added some comments, but okay, I want to turn to the next step. Okay, so I want to discuss now what I call the analytic case. Okay, so depends on whether you are familiar with bounded analytic semigroup. So I started with a bounded semigroup, and some semigroups are called analytic. The bounded analytic semigroups are those ones for which there exist bounded analytic extension on the sector around R plus, and they are characterized by this property. If you start with a bounded CEO semigroup, then it is bounded analytic semigroup if and only if A is sectorial or with a size strictly less than pi over 2. So if you don't know bounded analytic semigroup, you can take this as a definition. So we consider the picture when the sector is with an angle less than pi over 2. Well, when we begin to discuss, when we begin to talk about different sectors, different angles, you have to realize that this property of having a bounded H infinity theta calculus depends on theta. And it depends on theta, okay, it depends on theta, but there is an easy property, which is that one. If the angle is bigger, then it is easier to have a bounded H infinity calculus because the sup norm is bigger, so the estimate is easier to obtain. Okay, so when you reduce the angle, it's harder. Okay, so the theorem I want to mention is the following, which is some sort of converse to the previous one. If you start with a bounded analytic semigroup, which generates a minus A on some non-commutative LP space, so A is sectorial of type strictly less than pi over 2, so we can consider H infinity calculus for theta strictly less than pi over 2. And the result is that if A has a bounded H infinity calculus for some theta strictly less than pi over 2, then TT admits a loose dilation. So you see, it means that up to this change of angle, it means that the previous proposition has a converse. Yeah, and okay, I will say more in a few minutes. So this theorem, in fact, it does not appear in this form. Okay, there is a paper of Hollisch and Lutzweiss, 2006, which essentially contains everything to get to this result. In their paper, they show this result for commutative LP spaces using square functions, and I will explain to you in a minute. And because on non-commutative LP spaces we have some non-commutative square functions which allow to do the same. Okay, so let me explain you the commutative case. So in the commutative case, if you start with an operator A with the bounded H infinity functional calculus for some theta less than pi over 2, then you have this estimate. So the norm of x is equivalent to this square function. So this is some kind of square function which appears in the work of Stein, Littlewood, Pelle, Stein square function, this kind of thing. So this is this kind of square functions which appear here. And there is an easy way to prove the theorem I stated before, which is to consider this space LP of omega valued in L2 of R, because this norm is the norm of a certain element of this space. So you consider the translation by T in the second variable here. And then it's an isometric group, which is your own. Let me see. Okay, so you consider this operator J from X into Y, which is given, which you can define because of this equivalence. You take some X here, and you associate the element of Y whose this number is the norm. So you consider this element, you consider an element of Y as a function from R into LP of omega, which is a bit exaggerating, but you up to some approximation you can do that, and you define J of X to be this function, and so by this is exactly the norm of J of X. So the J is well defined, and you consider 0 on the left of 0. And then you can see that if you make this translation by T, this shift by T, you replace S by S plus T, which means that you get the same but applied to TT of X. So this is the relation which is in. And then if you introduce the orthogonal projection onto that space into L2 of R, and if you consider the tensorization to an operator onto Y, it means that you have this relation. And then there is another step which consists in using similar estimates from A star to get some projection. So if you can consider analogous square function estimates for A star, and you get an operator P prime which satisfies this property, and when you combine P and P prime, you get exactly this relation. So you get what you want, which Q equals to P prime P. And so this gives you some dilation on this Y, but then you can embed this one in bigger LP space by using a complementation property. You can get what you want. And in the, so this is some sketch of the proof in the by Froelich and Weiss, and it turns out that in the non-commutative case, in the work with Marius, Junger, and Xu, we introduced some non-commutative square functions associated to semigroups, and what we showed, for instance, is that let me just consider the case P bigger than 2, which is the simpler to write down. If you consider a non-commutative LP space, an operator with a bounded H infinity calculus, we showed this kind of equivalence, which is the analog of that one. But in the non-commutative case, as in the non-commutative case inequalities, you have to consider two terms. The natural terms, in some sense, and the one coming by taking the joint. And so if you consider the preceding proof, but in the using least square functions, you can get a similar result. Okay, so let me go to this directly. So I want to briefly talk about non-commutative diffusion semigroups. This kind of semigroups were discussed in the talk by Tao Mei. We consider the following definition. We say that a non-commutative diffusion semigroup will be a semigroup defined on the polynomial algebra and satisfying the following property. First, each TT is a contraction in all empty spaces, and second property, if you consider the realization of TT on L2, then you assume that TT is self-adjoint. So this is some kind of semigroup which appear naturally in different contexts in this setting. So because you TT is a contraction semigroup on each LP, you can consider its realization on LP, and you call A sub P its generator. And by Stein's interpolation principle, it's quite easy to show that AP sectorial of some type, which is given by this number, which is less than pi over 2, you have the analyticity, which is what I mean. This property of self-adjointness on L2 ensures analyticity of the of the NP realizations of the semigroups for any P strictly between 1 and infinity. And the corollary of the previous theorem is that for any P, and if you take some theta bigger than this angle, then AP has a bounded H infinity functional calculus if and only if P sub T admits a loose dilation. The reason why this is a corollary of the previous theorem is the following. I want to show you basically what is the result you need. I explained to you the easy proposition that if you have a loose dilation, then you have an H-infinity calculus, but for some theta bigger than pi over 2. This is what I explained using this transference principle and this Tiber-Cruz theorem. And so if you want to prove this way, you want to prove that this implies this, you have to be able to go from having a bounded H-infinity calculus with a big angle to having a bounded H-infinity calculus with a smaller angle. And this is exactly what we could do in the work with Marius-Unger and Xu on this non-commutative diffusion semigroups, which we proved some property called R-sectoriality, some R-sectoriality property, which allows to reduce the angle of H-infinity calculus. So this is exactly what happens for this class of semigroups. It is possible to reduce the angle. In other words, this arrow can be reversed. This is the meaning. And what else? Okay, let me try. I'm going the wrong way. I'm not used to. Okay. And the other property was the previous one. If you have a bounded H-infinity calculus, you have a loose dilation. I just want to mention that in the commutative case, which is the case when n is commutative, any tt as above admits a tight dilation. I mentioned at the beginning that in the commutative case, you get a tight dilation if you have some majorization by a positive contraction. And this is exactly what happens in this case. When you have a contraction acting on all empty spaces, it has this sub-majoration property. So in the commutative case, you have no problem. But in the non-commutative case, you have a lot of questions, and this is quite an interesting area. So for non-commutative diffusions and migrants, we do not know if it's possible to get a tight dilation. And we do not even know if it's possible to get a loose dilation, or equivalently by this corollary, to get a bound dilation physical calculus. Okay, so I would like to finish, maybe I have 3-4 minutes. I would like to finish quickly by giving you a few examples. So now I just want to come back to some older results. So these results which are in the work with Marius Unger and Xu. In this work with because of this open problem, because we do not have any general property ensuring that these semigroups have a tight dilation, we had to consider, because we were interested in some special classes of semigroups, and so we had to consider for these classes to find a technique allowing to show H infinity calculus. And it turns out that in many cases when we get H infinity calculus, it is because there is a dilation. So this is what I want to show briefly. So we had this example, for instance, we had the example of show multipliers. So what we had considered was the following. So I write here the definition of a show multiplier, which is associated to a bounded family of complex numbers. So this is the operator which takes any matrix representing an operator to another operator, and if it is bounded, and if it is a bounded show multiplier, then it is bounded on all SPs. And what we had, for instance, in this work was that if you start with two sequences of complex numbers, then the show multiplier associated to this family of complex numbers is bounded on B of L2, and it is actually a contraction, and it is even a diffusion semigroup. And for this diffusion semigroup, it turns out that the realization of TT admits a tight dilation. So this is some kind of a natural example. And unfortunately, maybe I have not enough time. Okay, I just want to mention another example, which is very canonical, the construction contains a dilation, essentially. So this is the example of what is called the Q-Ornstein-Nuremberg semigroup. So I have no time to go through this definition. So let's assume that you know everything about pure deformation for Neyman algebras, as introduced by Bozeko, Speicher, and also in some work of those two authors and Kummerer. So these Q deformation, these Von Neumann algebras of Q deformations are generated by what are called the Q Gaussians, and you have associated non-commutative LP spaces, and you have a construction called the second quantization. And the interesting phenomenon here, okay, so the second quantization is consistent, associated to any contraction on the underlying Hilbert space, a certain contraction which turns out to be contractive on all NPs. And it turns out, and this is something I wanted to point out, is that in the construction of the second quantization, you can see that there is a dilation property behind. So I just wanted to mention this. If we start with any contraction like before, then the realization of this second quantization on LP has a tight dilation. And now you can pass to semigroups and you can get similar results. If you start with a semigroup of contraction, the resulting semigroup will have a tight dilation, and it is some kind of semigroup which are in the previous family of diffusion semigroup in the case of self-adjointness. And the most famous example of such a semigroup is the so-called Q-Arnstein-Nuremberg semigroup, which corresponds to the this construction, but in the case when AT is just this semigroup on H. So what I wanted to mention here is that this Q-Arnstein-Nuremberg semigroup has this dilation property. What I really wanted to say is that if you look at examples, you find dilations in many situations. So this is some sort of encouragement. I don't know if this word exists, but to go into that direction in searching dilations, because it seems to exist in many different cases, in many different interesting areas. Okay, thank you for your attention.